goes high towards the play there. Walsh got there ahead of him though. On care plays it back in again. And no offside.
Hello and welcome to episode 28 of the Washbag Swindon Town FC podcast and our review of the 2013-14 season. I'm Ron Smith. Well, Town had finished in mid-table for the first time in five seasons, and a really boring campaign it actually was. We're tipped for relegation, but we actually overachieved with an eighth place finish. The change of manager at the eve of the season, we beat QPR, then met Chelsea at the County Ground. Alex Pritchard's wonderful free kicks, Rangers' goal scoring, and then everything else on top of that. Calls for Mark Cooper's head, changing and now squabbling owners, and we still don't know who owns the club. So not really much has happened this year, nothing to talk about and to reflect on nothing. Mid-table finish, boring. Joined by Sam Mooreshead,
hello.
Team advertiser. Hello, welcome.
Thank you.
Andrew Still-Davis of Flit Wiltshire.
Good morning.
And also Brennan Hobbs.
Of nowhere.
of the Washbags graphics department, if
yes.
There is such a thing.
Yes.
Photoshop, yeah. Well, have a quick sort of chat about Rotherham. It wasn't the most exciting game in terms of build-up. Nothing really riding on it other than league position and players really earning their contract for next season. I mean, Sam, the first half was, as I saw, the worst performance this season.
Yeah.
And disagree with that?
No. Well, at home it was probably the worst half of
football. Well, I've only been to one away game. So, there we go. I hold my hands up.
There seem to be minds on beaches and cocktail bars, and that's end of season syndrome, and didn't really get going. Everything was 5 yards off. Rotherham were dynamic, quick, good, even though they've managed to rest half of their first team, they still managed to come out of the traps quickly. And I guess
Very quickly.
About 52 seconds it was, rather than the 58, I think, that the BBC text came up with. I think it's the fastest goal I can remember Town conceding for quite a long time. Mm. I thought they were quite good in the second half. It's just there was too much to do. And I thought they controlled the game second period. Rotherham just forgot how to play. I think they let them pass the ball around the midfield. And I think overall a draw probably would have been deserved. But yeah, that first half just cost them. And I think it was a case of this is the end of the season. Oh, wait, no, it's not the end of the season. We've still got 90 minutes to play.
Mm. I mean, it was strange. I mean, it's quite a few times recently, Andrew, where Town have actually needed to come out second half and actually bring out a performance. I can't remember the particular games at the County Ground, but there have been some, and it has been noticeable that Town have improved. I mean, thank God we did, because it was actually such a dire first half.
Yeah.
You know, there were some great performances second half, particularly Jay McEvely. It ultimately turned out to be his final game for Town. I mean, how unlucky was it for him to have that long shot that from the corner and hit the bar? Well, it was just so unlucky. He was obviously trying so hard throughout the game.
It would have been a great way to sign off what has been a good career at Swindon for him, in my opinion. He came in for some stick at the start of the season. But for me, since Christmas, he's probably been consistently one of Town's better players. And he just leads by example. And he always puts his all in. And the change of system that Mark Cooper has tried out in a few games recently, Coventry and Brentford at home, Bradford at home, he's looked a different class above the rest. And it was a shame it didn't go in. It was so unlucky. I think there was a few murmurs around me and Sam in the press box when that corner was played short of what do they think they're doing. And they soon kept silent when they crashed against the crossbar.
Afterwards, Cooper said that it is a request from McEvely to actually practice that during training yesterday, to have something practice like that and actually nearly get a goal from it was fantastic. I mean, yeah, I admit myself, with McEvely at the start of the season, I knew that he wouldn't be playing much at that time. He was in the group of players really with injuries like with Troy and Alan Navarro, and yeah, it's absolutely so totally surprised me how well he's actually sort of been consistent, as you say, this season. I mean, Brendan, the game, fizzled out, had a bit of a pre-season sort of friendly about it. I mean, the key thing from the game is really about the youth team players being blooded to some extent. I mean, we had Connor Waldron make his first start? Yeah.
Mm.
And Will Randall come on quite late. What did you make of The young striker, Waldron.
I think I thought he did okay. His touch was quite neat, and he seemed to grow on as the grow into the game as it went on. I think as Sam touched upon it, that Rotherham, for example, they rested a few of their players and brought in some other players. But throughout the Rotherham team, they were sprinkled with very experienced players. And I think three of their players, Claude Davis, Joe Scars and Lee Frecklington, amassed over 600 appearances just between those three.
And then if you look, stats.
Oh, yeah. Good bit of research. Whereas if you compare that to Swindon's team, I think Mark Cooper had a great idea of trying to play a few of the youngsters, but we didn't have the experienced players to support that. I mean, if you look at experienced players like Michael Smith, who's got 80-odd appearances, and Luongo, who's got like 50-odd, if you take Fodderingham and McEverley out of the equation, then there are not that many. They are a bunch of first-team pros in their first season, and some youth players, and some players that were playing in the non-leagues last year. And in the first half, they did look like that, and they did look like they were thrown together, and they didn't have the experience glue to stick them all together. And I think the first half was pretty dire, but I thought the second half was great, and I thought they really showed a lot of spirit and a lot of effort. And yeah, I think that would go down as one of the low points of the season, was when McEverley's shot hit the crossbar, because it would have been great for him, because I didn't know that his contract hadn't been renewed until later, which was quite an upsetting moment for me. But it was great, and it reminded me a bit, is it the Holy Grail, Monty Python, the Holy Grail? I'll probably get told off for this by some fans, because I probably got the wrong film, but when the knight's running from miles away, and there's the drum music, and it focused on the other, it was like that, when the ball was there, you were focusing on the ball, and then you saw him just running, and then you focused on the ball again, and you saw him running, and then when he hit it, and he thought, I think a few of us all jumped up, and thinking it was going in, and when it didn't, it was quite probably a low point, because that would have been brilliant if that had gone in. But I think on the whole, I think the young players, they didn't disgrace themselves, and I think some of the players could grow into the first team next year and be quite key. I think Ben Gladwin, this time last year was playing for Marlow, wasn't it? So I think next year he could.
We didn't have one of his better games of the
season. No, I don't think he did. I think in the second half he looked a bit more composed on the ball, and I think that's just through experience. He needs to work on that.
I mean, as well for the second goal, because he was the one tracking back with Wes Thomas, I think. He wasn't quite keeping up with him as well. And when the cross came in, he should have been there. At least he should have tried to jump, and it was quite sort of static, really. So just got to learn to with his overall contribution, I think, to the game. And in some of his long passing, as was fantastic against
Preston,
wasn't there. But can't expect something. All the games you say they're all thinking about beaches and whatever else. So not really much more to say about the game, really, apart from that half-time competition. Now, all throughout the season, they've been offering the opportunity to win a Mercedes A-Class, I believe. Oh God, sponsorship was actually worth it. And for the competition, where various people qualified, I thought there'd be about 10 different people who kick the ball through a little hole in the town end goal, would be there trying to do the same thing. But no, one person had the opportunity to shoot from halfway line to try and win the car.
It happens to work in the advertiser sales department as well.
Oh gosh. So what was all that about? Did you speak to anyone like Adam Wainwright or?
Not me personally. He's been in contact with the club at various points during the week. I know that Darren's a bit upset with the way that it was handled. I think the original intention was there was the first round, and then they broke it down through to semi-final stage, and then there were going to be a couple of people in the final.
I know, still from the halfway line.
No. As far as Darren was aware, it was going to be what it had been the whole way through, and that someone would win a car. That might have been miscommunication. It might have been a misunderstanding on his part. It certainly wasn't communicated great to the fans. It didn't make for any kind of spectacle. No. And the poor guy wasn't even allowed to wear his football boots when he went to do the kick from halfway. He was meant to put trainers on, and obviously it had been watered, so it's slippy. So it's a bit of a shame, isn't it? It makes you wonder, was there really ever the car to win in the first place? I mean, it's great advertising, obviously, and it was quite entertaining for every other half time. And I was amazed by the number of people who managed to get it through that hole, to be honest. but it's a bit of a damp squib at the end of it.
Yeah,
it seems all rather pointless, and You know, they could have just hung a Mercedes banner up over the goal and just said Mercedes a few times loudly over the tannoy.
Like, like what we've both done.
Yeah, there we go. We've said it enough times. It's
working.
Worked.
It's worked, yeah. I'm going to get paid, so. That's the problem. Wouldn't be nice if we got a free car for that.
Well, he got what, I have to say, he is getting one for a weekend, isn't he? He's getting a higher car for a weekend from Mercedes.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, good. Yeah.
That's... I've said Mercedes again and again.
Right, the other bit of confusion in the past couple of weeks has been about the boardroom matters and the ownership. We can't go into too much detail about that, but nonetheless, it's not the right... Well, it's not good to have any sort of confusion about ownership at any point of the season, but particularly now. I mean, Cooper, Andrew, sort of talked post-match. He actually admitted that it is actually hampering him in terms of the ability to sign players for next season. And he's, you know, obviously still saying, you know, he's still in discussion with Lee Power on ongoing basis, you know, about plans. But it's very clear that they cannot sign players at the moment and contract renewals. And we'll come on to the retained list and put out contract players in a minute. But I mean, what's your sort of thoughts on sort of timings of when this is going to be resolved, or the, you know, what you think is going to be the impact sort of moving forwards?
Well, it's not, you know, it's not been great, has it, in terms of the timing of when it's all come out. You know, it is just another year in the life of Swindon Town. It wouldn't be the club without something happening. But yeah, you know, obviously Mark Cooper's made it clear that the current situation is hindering his plans. I don't think there's any clear indication as yet onto when it's going to be resolved. Obviously, court was adjourned in the week, and I know they want to set a new date ASAP, and they're looking to have a whole day in the courtroom. So, you know, maybe that'll speed it up. I'm not sure. Obviously, I'm not an expert on terms of all this stuff that goes on in the courtroom, but you know, it needs to be, you know, the bottom line is that it needs to be resolved ASAP, because we don't want, I know Mark Cooper tried to say that it didn't matter to him whether it's all done last minute again, but you know, we don't want a repeat of last year where, you know, everyone was thrown together at the last minute, and you know, we just want it settled, and hopefully that will allow Mark to bring in the players he wants fairly quickly, give the squad a good pre-season, and hopefully they'll be raring to go. Because I do think, you know, there are reasons to be optimistic for next season. I think, especially going over the last 8 games, and you know, the home performances against the likes of Brentford and Preston and Sheffield United, I think if they can keep the core of that squad together and bring in a few more, then...
But you know, it's all about, you know, what their ability to bring in. But I mean, Sam, with the actual, say, you know, we've got no control over who wins this, you know, boardroom battle. But ultimately, it's apparent that Lee Power has brought something to the table in respect of his links to other football clubs. And do you think that? I mean, the thing with Tottenham's a bit uncertain with Tim Sherwood's future there, but. Obviously, Jack Stevens at Southampton has been immense in terms of his link. But if Power goes, do those links also go in the ability to bring in players there?
I think yes. I think unless whoever was to come in instead of Lee Power also had similar links as an agent, as a player, you know, friends with managers at top level, friends with chairman at top level. Yeah, it's going to disappear. I think that's it's fairly obvious, and probably the biggest negative about. If it were to end with him not being involved in the club, then there would have to be someone who would be able to fill those shoes, and they're pretty big shoes to fill. I mean, there are not many people who have that sort of expertise and wide range of contacts.
So unless Mark Cooper's friends with Jose Mourinho and Arsene Wenger,
yes,
exactly. Then we'd be all right.
Exactly, but I mean, it's obvious that those links that the Power has done good for this club this season. I don't think that. From a playing point of view, there is anything that can be disputed about how much of a positive impact that model has had. People didn't believe it would work, and you know, despite there being so many injuries and suspensions this year, the players that they've brought in as nobodies, you know, kids and misfits, and they've turned them into a bunch of players who have got the wherewithal, ability and strength of character to come eighth in a division where there is a lot of Football League experience. Maybe not as high quality a league as it has been in recent seasons, but a lot of experience in the teams they've played. So, yeah, if Power goes and that model goes, in its current format, then we're back to square one again, as we've been every season for the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Right, so, I mean, one of the... well, might as well talk about Niall Ranger briefly. I mean, his contract was cancelled on Thursday evening. Mutual consent. I mean, Niall, in his tweet, did kind of say that the club have stood by him, thick and thin, really, and perhaps tried to... surprised him to some extent in terms of how well they've tried to assimilate him and to look at him as a professional and build his career. I mean, Brendan, it's, you know, it's sad on a footballing side for Ranger. I mean, what are your thoughts on his season as a whole and what his future lies for him, really?
Well, I mean, yeah, who knows what's going to happen to him in the future. The guy's got ability, and that's probably the saddest thing of all. Is the fact he is, you know, a very, very talented footballer. I think at this level, he was, you know, head and shoulders above others with, you know, his ability to control and bring people into play. He was very, very good. But it's off the field, you know, can you have someone playing for your club that acts the way he does? I don't think you can. I think most people, when that bit of CCTV footage came out of him recently, I think a lot of people lost patience with him. And whereas people... going to overlook a lot of stuff that he'd done. I think that was the final straw for a lot of people. And there was almost a fear that he was going to get away with it, I think, in various forums. And I think when they finally got rid of his cancelled his contract, there is that sadness that, you know, we have lost a very, very good player, but you can't have someone like that, you know, the way he acts off the field. And it's quite interesting, I think. I don't know how well he gets on people in the dressing room as well. I mean, we can speculate on that, but if you go on Twitter, when a lot of all the Swindon Town players were always tweeting each other, he never seemed to ever get included in any of those. So I'm not sure whether he assimilated himself well in the dressing room.
I mean, you said before, Andrew, we both met, you know, and interviewed Niall. I mean, what, you know, from within the club, how do other players see him? Have you spoken to them about that?
No, well, I've not. Me personally, I've not spoken to any players direct about him. And the one time me and Sam did have the pleasure, shall we call it, of having the chance to speak to Niall, it was after the Bristol City game. So we'd all wanted to
speak
to him.
We'll come on to that later.
But we had him for, well, it couldn't have been any longer than 2 minutes. So we didn't really, and he seemed to speak well. The answers he did answer, you know, seemed to come across well and well thought out. So judging on that 2 minutes alone, we didn't have much to judge him. But no, I've not really spoken to any players about how they've, you know, got on with him.
I think because there was a bit earlier in the season where, was it that the players asked Cooper and Power to give him another chance? Is that true? Or was that another...
I think it was a general conversation between every aspect of the football club.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they recognised that Niall Ranger, as a player and purely as a player and not as a person, was an invaluable asset, to not just to them, but to the club in general. Unfortunately, Niall Ranger is not just the player, it's Niall Ranger the player and the person. And, you know, he's had more lives than a dead cat. And I think it's probably right that it's come to an end. I think at some point you've got to make a choice between protecting your own integrity as a club and wanting to succeed.
It's all about reputation in the end, because, you know, football clubs are at the heart of the community, or meant to be. Portray themselves to all, you know, all types of people, all genders, everyone, build the community, and you can't have someone who's out there championing your cause in the most obvious way, wearing a shirt up to whatever it is, consistently.
Well, historically, it's a community club, isn't it? So you've got to be able to give an example to the young players, particularly, but the young members, the junior Robins.
Are the club offering any refunds on Ranger number 9 shirts?
Not that I'm aware of, and I wouldn't expect them. One thing I would say about the whole thing is that Mark Cooper has handled Niall Ranger particularly well. He has an impossible position, really, where he's got a star striker who he knows will win him games, and the stats prove it, who doesn't turn up to training, who does all this stuff away from the ground, which brings the name of the club into disrepute. And yet he still manages to somehow integrate him within the squad for 25 games, get him scoring goals, making assists. I think Town picks up something like 1.87 points in the games that, on average, that he played, compared to less than a point in the games that he didn't play. So
good. Normally, I'm the one with these stats. Unfortunately, this season, my time's been short. I haven't been keeping tabs of them anymore. So I'm very grateful for Brendan and Sam this time turning up with some stats. This is good quality.
I think that that is what has to be recognised. Cooper managed to get 25 odd games out of him.
Yeah.
I mean, and his man management of him when he, you know, you imagine a squad of players, particularly the strikers, who have got someone coming in when he's not turning up to training or he's causing disruption elsewhere away from the training ground. You as a striker would be frustrated if that player was then brought in given the starting lineup, but yet Cooper has managed to negotiate all aspects of that to make sure they're not irritated, Niall's still playing well, and the team is winning in general.
Well, in that case, let's send Cooper out to Russia and Ukraine at the moment, some peacekeeping maybe, I don't know. Well, the main thing, obviously, after the game yesterday, we had the announcement about the out-of-contract players. And, I mean, Ranger, we had another option to go that we could have exercised, you know, to have kept him had things been hunky-dory. But I suspect that because of what's happened off the field, it would have been difficult for the club to have committed perhaps to his wage, and there probably would have been some sort of wage hike. Because it all followed on from the original court case as well. But I mean, in terms of the other out-of-contract players who will definitely not be offered deals, Danny and Gesson, no surprise there from my perspective. Aaron Oakley, which is a big shame, so obviously a local lad, come through the youth and has had a broken leg or broken foot last summer and really found it difficult to integrate into the team. Caden Jackson was away on loan but still scored plenty of goals. Alex Smith was a bit of a surprise. Lee Bedwell, obviously another youth teamer, but obviously difficult with Ty and Wes. Mark Francis, a bit away on loan, another youth teamer. Lee Cox, no surprise there. Alex Ferguson, don't really know much about him. Jay McEvely, we've already touched on, big disappointment. And Paul Benson, not really surprised there. But I mean, Alex Smith was the one on that list that did shock to some extent Brendan. Meaning, you know, he's been injured most of the year, but he's been a bit useful when he has been about. Well, I just kind of.
I think he was. I think he was versatile. I think that's why I was surprised. He could play in a number of positions, and from what I've seen of him this year, he looks quite comfortable in a few positions, which I think is quite invaluable if you're having a very small squad. You want people to be able to fill in different places. So I was quite surprised to see him being released, especially Mark Cooper seemed to talk about him a lot when he came back, that it was a big plus that he was coming back as well. I think that was a big surprise. No one else really. I mean, McEvely obviously was a real shame. Said Aaron Oakley, I was really surprised because he was always tipped to be one of the bright young things coming through the squad. So I was quite surprised to see that he was released. I don't know whether his injuries may think it may hamper him going forward. I don't know, but yeah, there was no other surprise that with the other names that were released. So does this say that Williams and Navarro aren't out of contract?
Williams has got another year left on his deal. Navarro is out of contract and I expect him to retire when that contract expires at the end of June.
But how come he wasn't referred to in that statement? That was the strange thing about Navarro. Because
purely speculating, I would imagine, because he's been going through the series of process with his insurers about medical retirement, and there may be some legal thing about he's just going to retire when his contract runs out, and that we just don't make a big fuss about it.
It's not a decision for the club to take. The player will take it himself.
Potentially. We don't know the ins and outs of it, and the club haven't been willing to talk about it. I think it's been fairly sensitive trying to get that negotiation for him through his insurers. So they haven't been willing to speak about it.
It doesn't make sense, sir. I mean, if he's out of contract anyway at the end of the season and he's retiring, well, why all this business with the insurers? Because he's obviously been on the books or the club trying to seek a reduction in what they've paid him or a bonus that he was entitled to stay if he saw out his contract. I presume Di Canio players were on some sort of deal, like some sort of, you know, if they stayed for their loyalty bonuses. Well, it's on Football Manager, so I presume it applies in real life.
I'm not aware of that being the case. Of course, it might pass.
Loyalty bonus, it's called. So if you stay for your remainder of your contract, you get paid a lump sum at the end of it. I don't know. It just seems doesn't kind of make sense, really. I mean, if the club were trying to Navarro's contract, get rid of it last summer, been trying to, you know, get him off the books, off the wage bill, you know. It's obviously held on for so long.
Well, for him, it's a difficult situation for him individually. I know that he's, in some sections, not well-received amongst the Swindon support, but I mean, the guy's, what, 32 years old, and he still should have three or four more years of playing. Yeah. He's done his cruise ship for the third time in his career. You've got to feel sorry for him.
So is it more just like some sort of professional insurance that he's got in terms of an indemnity?
As far as I'm aware, there is a professional insurance that he has, which he's been...
That guarantees him an income
of sorts. Okay. But obviously, with it being as it is, they've been trying to sort out exactly what that is and how it would go forwards, and hence why the club has been so quiet on it. We have asked a number of times for them to just give the public an idea from an official point of view what's going on, but they've been so quiet, and I think it's because it's quite sensitive. He wants to sort it with insurer. You know, if it is career ending for him, that's a big shame for a nice guy who never really got to show what he could do at Swindon Town. So I think that's why they've been quiet about it. And I would expect him to go off and start whatever life he would now start post-playing from the end of June.
Publican.
I've no idea, you'd have to ask him.
What else? Horse racing trainer. You know? Don't know what footballers do nowadays. Just retire, so earn so much money, of course. Andrew Troy, Archibald Henville. I mean, what it said on BBC Wiltshire before the match, that he was expecting to be offered a pay-as-you-play deal. Thoughts on that and whether he'd take it up, really?
Well, he's 23 years of age, so for him personally, it may not be the most securest of deals, but he's missed most of the season with injury. He's got, it's well known that his knee is very
shattered.
Very prone to injuries, and there's no saying that next year he couldn't pick up another serious injury and be out. So I don't think there'll be many clubs that'd be willing to take him on with the wages he was on, because he's one of Paolo Di Canio's signings, so he's going to be on a fairly good wage. And also, I think he'd struggle to get for any medicals. So this pay-as-you-play deal may be the best thing for him going forward for the meantime. And from a club point of view, it'd be great to keep him out of the club for another year, 2 years, whatever the deal would be, because since he's come back from injury, he's been fantastic.
Particularly like ball playing, coming out of the defence bit, which we missed to some extent yesterday.
Away at Coventry, second half particularly, Mark Cooper labelled him as... likened him to Franco Baresi, the AC Milan legend, because it was just at times remarkable the way he carried the ball out and just went so far with it. And he's just added a calmness to the defence, and his partnership with Jack Stevens. It's no coincidence that since those two have formed that partnership at the back, the results improved drastically.
I mean, how long are the club going to give him, though? Because, I mean, that's the key. I mean, as a player, Troy's only going to accept a pay-as-you-play deal, but after he's had a good period to exhaust speaking to other clubs. And, if it's going to be, you've got to come back to us in 2 weeks, I can't see he's going to take it, really, as a take it or leave it. But if the club are going to give him until 1st of July or something... Any thoughts there?
For different players, clubs will offer different lengths of time for consideration.
Mm.
Usually... you have to offer that contract of some kind by the third Saturday in May. If otherwise, the player is free to speak to other clubs. Obviously, that's now been done.
Because, when's his contract run out? It'd be like the 1st of July or something,
won't it? Yeah, 30th of June, 1st of July. I would imagine that both he and Swindon Town would want that decided as soon as is possible. So I would imagine that it will be a deadline before the transfer window opens on the 1st of July, and before obviously his deal runs out. It may well be earlier in June. I mean, you don't want to be going into the summer and him going away for his holidays, not knowing where the future is for him, and the club don't need to know whether they've got their first choice centre back, or having released Aaron Oakley with Darren Ward out of favour and still trying to figure out what's going on with Rafael Branco.
We've got Darren Ward wages next season as well, so
they were cut significantly when he took the extra year. It's not quite as substantial as previously. But central defence is somewhere that Cooper has to recruit fast, because of all the positions on the pitch to recruit late in the summer, that is the last place you want to be doing it.
One of the only players we weren't referred to in that list was Harry Gombar. Has he actually got another contract? Was it a 2-year contract? Was it a 1-year contract? Anyone want to take?
I think it was a 1-year contract, but I report it as a 1-year contract. I'm aware of it being a 1-year contract, but the club never said anything. And I mean, as far as they know, it doesn't exist. So
yeah,
he did break his leg.
Yeah, and that wasn't even reported by the club.
No, it wasn't. He put a post up on Instagram. That's how he became aware that he'd broken his leg.
Yeah. Why was he signed, Andrew?
Well, I did an interview with Lee Power back in, I think, end of January, I think, and I asked him about Harry Ogbonna, and all I got was, obviously, he broke his leg.
Yeah. But did... No, I'm not going to say it.
But Lee, I think... I'm putting my neck on the line now. I think I'm just trying to think about what was actually said, but I think Lee had said that prior to breaking his leg, that he was impressing in training. But no lengths of contracts was discussed. As far as I'm aware, it was a 1-year deal. But then with Andy Williams, I think a lot of people, myself included, thought it was a 2-year deal, and it seems that he has another year. So
we'll have to talk to the club. Can you inquire, please? Thank you.
Harry Ogbonna is the son of Tommy Ogbonna, who was associated with the consortium that came in January last year.
Really.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. That's only taken 15 months for us to actually, to whatever it is,
no,
to say it.
Yeah, I knew that.
On one of your podcasts.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, I knew that anyway. Anyway, right. God, what have we missed out? Player of the season. Right. Our readers made the right decision. West Fodringham, I salute you, readers and listeners. Great. That. And who came second? Lou Thompson and Jay came third. Pretty good. Flick, Wiltshire, readers, Sam, West Fodringham, won that as well.
I know.
who came second?
Second was Alex Pritchard and Nathan Thompson joint, and then Jay was, no, Yasser Kassim was third.
Yeah, okay, well, don't know. And the advert...
We had two of the top three of yours.
Yeah, but
and we had two of the top three of Flick's. Okay. I mean, there's not much discrepancy, is there?
the key thing is, I mean... Is Nathan Thompson's agent looking for a new club for him? And is it how many times that he may have voted?
Nathan Thompson's agent is the same as Lewis Thompson's agent, and you would have thought that if that was the case, he would have voted for equal for both. But obviously, Lewis came down in sixth or seventh or something like that. It's a paid-for vote. It's strange that it's so different to both of your votes, but... You know,
it was just a surprise, really, because Nathan has been so. I mean, Brendan. I mean, Nathan's. You know, he's a quality player. I mean, I wouldn't not. You know, he needs to be in the team, but his actual contribution, his ability to contribute this season has been. You know, he hasn't been much of what he was last year. Essentially,
last year,
get words out.
Yeah, no, last year was a real breakout season for him. I thought he was superb and won the award, you know, quite rightly. I think this year he's done well. I think he's been very good. He's been great going forward, and I think he's been a very, very good player. He certainly wasn't my player of the year, I must admit, and I was surprised when he came top in the ADVA poll.
Was he surprised?
But,
yeah, he was.
But there's no disgrace. It's not like, you know, some of the previous winners where, you know, you kind of by default you have to pick someone, because, you know, we've had a few seasons where it's been very difficult to choose it because we've had a really bad season. There were several people that could have won it, and he was in that group as those of people that could win it.
Okay, well, on that basis then, who's been the worst winner ever of an ADVA? Since, you know, it's our most long-standing Player of the Year award. Who would you go back and actually say was the worst ever winner of that competition?
50 years of that to go back through.
Well, it's difficult. Okay. There must be one during the Andy King or Steve McMahon
Frank
era.
Frank Talia's
era. Yeah. I think Bart Grimming won it.
Because Talia won it in 1999-2000, the year we got relegated. He was awful. That final,
so was everyone.
The final game at Stockport, it was just when he was sent off and he got man of the match. Just summed it up, really. It's a strange one. Right, okay, we'll play of the season. There's been plenty of moments this year, sort of hinted at the start of the recording. I mean, for me, there's a couple of key ones. I mean, first of all, the home game against Port Vale, primarily because it was my daughter's first game, and it was a fantastic 5-2 win. But the other one came up for me was Wolves away. Just a whole sort of experience. The second half was fantastic, and you know, nearly getting a win. But it's just the manner of the performance. I mean, Brendan, what you know, moment of the season, match of the season. What are your sort of memories looking back?
I suppose match of the season was we're probably Bristol City at home. I thought was fantastic. That was a really good game. I also like. I thought is it Sheffield United? Was that the Louis Thompson last minute winner there? Yeah. It wasn't a particularly good game, but the elation when he scored in the last minute was fantastic. Port Vale as well, I think, was a very good game. I think they've been really, considering what my opinion was in the summer, last summer, about how the season was going to go, I've seen a lot of good football this year, which I never thought I would. There's a lot of really good games, a lot of good sort of goals that we've seen flying in left, right and centre. So I think there's been plenty of good moments. I think probably one of the standout moments really for me is how certain players have really kicked on, and players that have been plucked from obscurity have been integrated into the team. And we mentioned, you know, Yasser Kassima earlier. I think he's been very, very good. I mean, he's had a little dip recently, but from a player that was, you know, struggled in non-league, for him to then come in and be a very integral part of the team.
But it all seemed to go downhill when I presented him with the t-shirt that you designed, proclaiming him as the Iraqi Pirlo, and he had his international.
Yeah, well, account. I got into a bit of a Twitter argument with someone that said that he was more of the Iraqi Xavi, and so whether that's caused him a bit of issue, he didn't know which one to emulate on the pitch.
So it's affected his...
Yeah, but it's benefit. Funny because one of my mates went to the Birmingham pre-season friendly, and I texted him and said, you know, how's the game going? And he said, there's a bit of a strange team. There's one guy, he's a real, real fat fella, but he didn't use the word fella, on the pitch. He was on trial from Brighton, and, you know, he doesn't look much up to it. And from that was obviously Kassim to where he went on to where he is now, I think has been great. And there's been people like that, like Gladwin and Branco to a certain extent. Team playing not in even in the conference level that were even lower than that, that have been transformed into, should I say, League One players, because, you know, I think they've still got
world class players.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to learn still. I think it's been, you know, one of the standout moments for me.
That's a lovely kind of broad,
yeah, you know, bit too
glossy broad. Look back at the season though with rose tinted spectacles. Andrew, you've been to plenty of games this year. I mean, for you, it's your first year, in journalism as well with Flick. You know, standout moments for you as the year's gone by?
QPR away will obviously stand out because it was obviously very early in the season. The team had just been thrown together. They were playing against a team who got an abundance of riches and...
Charlie Austin,
the money they've got is quite extraordinary. And, you know, as you said, Charlie Austin, and I think Jermaine Jean has played that night. Also Wright Phillips, if I remember rightly.
A load of has-beens on 60 grand a week, as I call
And for Swindon to put in the performance they did that night was great. And obviously Niall Ranger and Alex Pritchard got the first goals for the club. Rotherham away was Swindon's first away win of the season.
It was, wasn't it? Yes.
Also Rotherham's first defeat at home that season, and it was just a great performance because the first 10 minutes Rotherham had absolutely battered Swindon. You know, they hit the post a couple of times and you just thought it was just going to be one of those other, you know, another one of those away day performances.
It was how they started yesterday in some extent. They quick out the blocks and really put pressure on quite quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But they, you know, they settled down, turned the switch, and, you know, Pritchard's free kick was stunning. Most recently, since I've been working for Flick, the Brentford game at home has to stand out because, again, you know, Brentford were arrived at the County Ground smelling blood, really, because they wanted to move that. They were on the cusp of promotion to the Championship. They wanted to move that step closer.
It was just good to see Alan McCormack getting really truly wound up, really.
Yeah, and you know, it's just a brilliant performance. And also from a personal point of view, and I'll probably get slated for this later. From like a journalism point of view, I did meet one of my idols and one of my massive crushes in terms of Natalie Sawyer from Sky Sports. I think I embarrassed myself a bit that day in terms of chasing her about prior to the game. So that will be probably the high point of the season for me.
Okay,
yeah.
well, for Sam, I know what your high point, which is getting banned and having your picture in the advert, arms crossed outside the camera.
Yeah, that was fun. I'm never doing a photo shoot again, that's for sure. Yeah, that was interesting. we've covered this, I'm sure, before. I don't need to go back over it, obviously.
No.
Obviously, I still remain slightly bitter about it. It's fairly obvious. Anyone
you've got to do is blame Dan Hunt for the photograph.
I couldn't blame Dan. He's such a nice guy.
Yes.
in reality, that Wolves Day was my pick of the season.
Yeah, it was special.
It was really special. As following Swindon Town for however many years it is, I don't remember going away from a defeat being as proud of the team that I supported that day. So.
And it was all the feedback I had from the Wolves supporters straight after the game, talking to them outside Molineux and on the forums afterwards. And they were just saying, seriously, you know, you're better than us. You're better than some of the teams we played against in the Premier League.
Mm.
You're the best team that we've seen here for a long, long time.
And yet they still managed to lose 3-2. It was extraordinary.
It just summed us up, though, in terms of our vulnerabilities in defence and how teams can just quickly pick us apart, which has been consistent
throughout the season. You imagine the front six that played in that game with the back four that have played in the last 2 months, and that would have been a truly special day then.
But we still lost 4-1 at home.
No, it wasn't with that defence. No, it was the game before the defence changed.
Oh, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because you had City after, didn't we, away. So, yeah, true. True, actually.
So that's there you go. Put those two sides of the team together. It would have been an extraordinary team. And that's been part of the problem with the inconsistency of this season. The number of suspensions and injuries that have been there that have just disrupted it.
Well, the other thing this is, of course, is Mark Cooper's a quick word, really, about his first season in charge, Brendan.
Yeah, I think he's done really well.
He obviously got slated quite a bit from some quarters, particularly post Christmas, January.
Still does all the time. He constantly seems to have critics from all angles. You know, he can win 3 games in a row and then get a draw in at home, and it's Cooper out. But he's gone about his business. I personally quite like the guy. I think I love his interviews. His touch of arrogance in his interviews. He seems to. Very focused. He seems to know what he wants his team to do, and I think under the constant pressure that he's been put under by fans and all that sort of stuff, and also in having to deal with off field dramas, Niall Ranger, all these sort of things, he's carried himself really well. And I think, you know, I hope he stays for, you know, a lot longer. Well, if we're bottom at Christmas, obviously I reserve the right to change his opinion.
Yeah.
But I'd like to think
that's right, because what I do is I just cut that without the caveat on. I'll just play it next year just to remind people.
Yeah,
this is what Brendan said. He wants Cooper to be here on a 10-year contract, Steve McMahon style.
But I think chopping and changing manager just doesn't help. And as I've said before, I think on the pod with like Leyton Orient with Russell Slade, you know, they had a few dodgy seasons, but they kept with him and they're reaping the rewards now. You don't get anything from changing, especially when, you know, the state we're in, the sort of the amount of finance we've got, we're not going to attract, you know, any world class managers here. And I think Mark Cooper's done a really, really good job and should be given more time. And I'd like to see him have a full season with proper pre-season preparation that's not disrupted.
Yeah,
which is not.
Which is look a bit dodgy anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and looking elsewhere, the other key point from final weekend on the Football League is Bristol Rovers' relegation, which was quite interesting to see a club of their stature, of course, and they're getting relegated down to the Conference. So it just kind of fits the trend recently of Luton's and Oxford's and various people going down. So no great shame there. Anyway,
if you look at it, it's when it was second, weren't they, in the West Country this year. Only to Yeovil.
Yes. So true.
That's a pretty good result from recent years.
Yes.
I think that's a good return.
Mm.
Still can't reclaim the best in the West, but
no, not quite.
Maybe next year.
No, maybe not. But no. Anyway, well, that's really all that we've got time for this season on the podcast. Hopefully, going to be a recording one or two, maybe during the World Cup, depending on how far England progress. Really, which on that basis, we'll have one podcast. So, massive thanks to Andrew, Sam, and Brendan for joining me, and speak to you soon. Bye then.